You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 2. Brought to you in part by Alpine Credits. Own your home and need a loan? With Alpine Credits, homeowners get approved.
The Yankees have moved on. It's Yankees-Red Sox, and I'm all for that. I know there's a lot of people that hate on the attention that those two teams get, but it's a great rivalry.
I love it.
I want to watch it. I'm dying to see it tomorrow night. And I'm leaning Yankees. Like, did you see the violent moonshots last night from Judge and Stanton? Like, violent home runs. These guys, it's not really
what is the stat they have? They monitor the exit velocity?
Exit velocity. They're breaking records. Like, these two guys, like, Stanton breaks records every time he hits the ball. It's violent. And he crushed a ball last night to left. Crushed it. And Yankee Stadium was rowdy like you would expect. And Yankees, Red Sox. We were talking about the atmosphere at the ACC last night, where in hockey terms, the Leafs-Habs is very similar to Red Sox-Yankees. I have had the luxury of being in Yankee Stadium for a Yankee-Red Sox game and at Fenway for a Yankee-Red Sox game, and I'm not sure I've ever experienced anything like it.
Did you wear any, like, gear?
We've got into this conversation before, and I always take heat for it. If I go to games on the road, regardless of where it is, and I've been to a bunch of them at a bunch of different stadiums, I like to wear like a T-shirt of that specific team to kind of get the...
To jump on the bandwagon?
It's not even about the bandwagon. It's about the experience. You're right. I guess in a way, you're kind of on the bandwagon for that particular game.
You're protecting yourself a little bit.
There's an element of protection.
Yeah.
But like... Have you been to Yankee games?
Yeah.
So
great.
If you stay in Manhattan, you take the subway up, and it's amazing. There's so many Yankee fans. I've been to Wrigley multiple times. You wear a Cubs jersey, hat, you're in there. There's a million Cubs fans on the train up. Same thing with Fenway. So it's more about the experience, right? It's a whole day kind of thing.
But do you, like, pretend you're one of the fans? Like,
no,
you go, Jeter.
No. Like, I'm not putting on a fake accent. But I'm not openly rooting or cheering or anything like that. But the point I'm making is, because there is an element of protection, there was almost a full-out brawl in right field at Fenway between Yankee fans and Red Sox fans. Like, full-blown brawl. There was five Yankee
fans.
There's
brawls with Sens fans and Leafs fans. The people are crazy.
Not to this extent, though. Not like Yankees, Red Sox.
Oh, really? Did you see the one in Ottawa a few years back in the upper level where people were crawling over seats and punching each other? It's people are nuts. They have too much to drink. They do stuff that's ridiculous.
Yeah, drinking factors in. I don't think there's any denying that. But it'll be a toxic atmosphere at Fenway tomorrow night. And when it goes back to Yankee Stadium, the same thing. We're talking about Cinderellas and just how the A's, they had a great season. They played one more game than Baltimore. Baltimore played 162 games. You had a great season, you played 163. Someone texting in here with a great question about Cinderellas. It's a bit off track. We'll get into the Leaf-Habs game in just a moment. But I hadn't thought of this before. Someone texting into 105050 asking, is every team in the NBA not named Golden State a Cinderella?
Basically.
Are there 29 Cinderellas in the NBA? Like, if Houston
Actually, Houston's not a Cinderella. I don't think any team with LeBron on it you can call a Cinderella. I think stacked up against Golden State in a West Finals, you would have to say the Lakers might be a Cinderella.
Boston's not a Cinderella. Even the Raptors aren't. Like,
the Raptors are a Cinderella.
They're not. Like, if they made the finals...
From what they've done in the playoffs, they are a Cinderella.
That's taking Cinderella too far. That's not what Cinderella is.
You never know how far you can take Cinderella.
Cinderella is like the Oilers going to the final, or like...
Carolina going to the final.
The Raptors are a Cinderella.
Vegas going to the final last year as a Cinderella.
Really? Best team in the East, and they get dummied by Cleveland. They're a Cinderella, trust me.
I think you got to move
they're
the
They're a Cinderella post. On performance.
Well,
not roster or stats or players.
And history.
And history and performance.
Yeah, they're
you guys are taking it too far.
I think in the NBA, you have to move the goalposts.
What are you
going to
call them, favorite? They're Cinderellas.
Honestly, I think...
They're not even below a favorite.
I think this guy's onto something. I think anybody outside of Golden State is a Cinderella. I do.
He's not far off.
I do. Especially in the East. Yo, Houston stack team, James Harden, Chris Paul, you know, they're loaded.
But I think anybody, you look at it from two different angles. You're like, you know what? The Houston Rockets, they're real good. But at the end of the day, against Golden State, You're a Cinderella. When a team's that good, everyone else is a Cinderella.
Well, and look what they've done.
You guys are underselling the rest of the league.
No, I'm overselling
Golden State. By what Golden State does to teams?
And yet they've been to the finals four straight. Yeah, I know.
Right. And the only time they lost was because
you're
LeBron
blurting
put
out
forth
statements right now that have no.
No, because you're underselling. Boston's really good.
Yeah, I get it. But guess what, Golden State
really
will do
deep
to them? Guess what Golden State will do to them?
I don't know. We haven't seen it.
No, okay. They will kick their ass.
Jonas, if anybody beats Golden State from the East, it will be deemed a miracle.
Miracle.
What? A miracle.
You know what happens?
Oh, it can happen. Cinderellas can win sometimes.
But that's not a Cinderella. I'm
okay.
Sorry. That, like, Oakland winning the World Series is Cinderella.
Let me put it this way. If any other team in the AFC East, except for the Pats, wins the AFC
that's
East,
fair.
Is that a Cinderella?
Yes, that's fair.
How is Golden State and New England any different? How are they any different?
Because just look at the teams excellence in the AFC East.
Look at the teams in the NBA. No one can touch Golden State.
You tried to come with hot takes.
In the East,
they're not hot takes. You guys are just blowing up.
Anyway,
what a Cinderella is.
We'll call Ray in 4 or 5 minutes. Leafs Habs last night. It was. It's fun to get them back in action. It's fun to have the NHL rolling again. Matthews 5-on-5 was not one of his better nights, but it doesn't matter when you have that kind of talent. Like, that was what came out of the game for me. Game breakers are going to change. They change outcomes. The Habs do not have game breakers. They just don't. They don't have anybody that scares you.
And that's why a game breaker deserves kind of. No, you're not going on the fourth line for the third period. You're going to change the game with one play.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he did.
And that's why, like, you look back at the Subban trade, game breaker. Like, and you trade him, and like even Max Pacioretty, game breaker to some degree. You know what I mean? Like, the less skill, the less guys who can win you a game.
And I think the Montreal Canadiens understand that they lost some of those game breakers, but I also think they understood that they don't want those personalities in the locker room.
Then good luck.
I agree. I mean, you're going
to. It's tough.
What does it mean? You got the greatest locker room in the league, but
you're
the worst
to win.
Team
like,
on the ice. Yeah, it's. Being too focused on the locker room, you have to put some focus on it. There is value to it, 100%. Anybody that says otherwise.
I don't know if you can do like a personality slash performance slash what management slash coaching wants,
like a
30, 40,
yeah,
whatever percentage on what's necessary to win. The locker room's big, but if you don't have guys that can do it and get the job done, you'll see a lot of example. For Montreal, great game. You guys played great. You were fast. Everyone was saying, oh, they're playing so quick. So what? You
doesn't
lost.
Mean anything. What did I say at the top? If you're in the business of moral victories, you're a
loser.
If you're looking and seeking out moral victories, you're a loser. And that's the truth. The Habs, they played well last night. Full credit to them. The Leafs didn't play well, and guess who got 2 points? The Maple Leafs, because they're just more talented.
Yeah, that's what good teams do. They pick up 2 points when sometimes they don't really have a whole lot of business.
Exactly. And it's about time, because the Leafs have been on the opposite side for decades. Like, from 06 through 16, there were hundreds of those games where you're like, played really well. Yeah. Wow, penalty kill was great. Or whatever.
Couldn't get it done.
Couldn't get it done, but off to the next game, bring that same effort, and things are going to turn our way.
And that's
no,
why
they're not.
It's like you collect as many of those guys as you can. And that's what they've done. Like, they've hit. It's funny, like, you look at other organizations, they've hit on every one of, like, those top five picks. Like, they didn't miss. Like, even, like, Tampa, like, you can look back, they missed on Jonathan Drouin. And, like, obviously it turns into something good in Sergachev. But, like, Riley, Marner, Nylander.
Even Kadri at 7.
Kadri at 7. Like, you keep hitting after a while. And, like, even Vancouver, like, you start to see now, like, they get Pettersson. Vertanen, we'll
he's
see. Like,
good,
if
man,
he's,
that Pettersson.
But like, even Vertanen, like, if Ray and I were talking about this after the game the other night, like, they take Vertanen, and maybe like he can carve out a decent career.
He's going to be.
But like, they could have had
a nice one last night.
They could have had Nylander, or they could have had Ehlers.
Yeah.
Like, and like, suddenly, like, you have an extra game breaker, and like, suddenly you win a game that you're not supposed to. I don't know.
Yeah. No, for sure. You've got to. If you get into the top 10, you got to hit. You have to hit. Like,
and like, even one, if you miss even one, like Arizona with Dylan Strome, like,
mm-hmm,
that hurts.
How's that looking right now?
Kills.
It absolutely crushes you. They could have had Marner, could have had
Werenski.
Hanifin, they could have had Werenski, they could have had Provorov.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they chose Dylan Strome, who was a very good prospect. I mean, it's not the first time that's happened. It happens in every draft. Somebody in the top 10 is a bust or doesn't play out the way you thought they would. But anyway, Ray Ferraro coming up here in just a moment. William Nylander spoke with the Swedish media today, and he claims he didn't watch the game. Do you think he stayed up and watched that game live, or do you think
you? I'd go to sleep.
I think I don't know, man. I mean, what are they,
when it's
6 hours
teammates
ahead?
And you're involved in something like this, you're going to check it out. You want to see what's going on. I saw my old team win the Stanley Cup, and I couldn't take my eyes off it. Cheering against them, clearly, but...
Time zones, complicated. I understand that, but, what else is he doing with his time?
He's got to be ready.
Yeah. So instead of showing up at the rink at 9...
he can't fire up his iPad at 2 in the morning and just...
So 5?
Games aren't that long.
They are.
Well, I think at the very least he was aware that the game was happening.
Yeah. He woke up at 5:45 and caught the 6-minute summary on NHL.com.
Yeah, he did that. I think at the very least he woke up and grabbed his phone immediately and said what's going on. I mean, that's human nature. And he did say in Swedish that he wants to be in Toronto. He said it's in the hands of his agent. He doesn't know what's going on. I find that hard to believe that he wouldn't be seeking out details every day, but I don't know how that works. I don't know the interactions with agents.
Like, I will say this one thing. I mean, we talked to Mike Peckett today, and I talked to him earlier this afternoon trying to set up him calling in. And one thing he said was, I wish I was a little bit more involved, like as opposed to my agent saying, do this, or... my dad doing this, or because dads nowadays are heavily involved.
Well, and I think actually that's probably why Shanahan did what he did. So, like, Nylander hears it directly from him. Like, this is like, don't listen to all these other people. We want you here. If you want to, like, we want to figure out a way to make this work so we can win. You know what I mean? Like, you're speaking directly to him. You don't have to, there's no agents.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to hear what you said as opposed to, you know what I mean? Like, Dubas talking to the agent.
Yep. Oh, for sure. Here's Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst. What did you make of the game last night, Ray?
I didn't think they were very good. I would say now we have in our heads a standard that is probably a lot better than they were able to play last night. I envision lots of zone time, lots of shots, making the other team feel under pressure, and I didn't see much of that at all last night. I thought Toronto was under pressure. I thought Toronto had a really difficult time getting through the middle of the ice. I thought Montreal actually played really good. They really kept their defense up in the play, and so the Toronto forwards had nowhere to go. And I thought it was a good game for Montreal and a poor game for Toronto, and Toronto wins, and I think we might say that more than a couple times this year.
When you chalk that up, Ray, to like first, sometimes the first night you're a little bit off?
Oh, for sure. Like, I always found playing on the road easier to start. You're sitting around and everybody's talking about, okay, how are we going to go out? Make sure you get in line to get out on the ice for the pregame ceremony or whatever. And, you got family members flying in a lot of times for first game of the season. I don't know. It's just like a bit of a halfway. You're so excited, you've burned your energy out before you start. And I just, at no point did I look at that game last night and think, oh yeah, here it is. They're on top of this and they're gonna run away with the game. But Freddie Anderson was terrific again, which I don't think should go understated, because his last two Octobers have been far from terrific. And, this is the thing here, don't you think, guys? Like, they've got enough weapons up front. If somebody's not having a good night, they get somebody else to have a good night. And so while there were a couple of guys that probably didn't have the puck very much, it doesn't even matter if Matthews had it a lot. He had it twice. It's in the back of the net. And, Tavares gets the one shot, bam, it's in the net. It's like, they're just so dangerous, and I guess that's what highly skilled teams are going to be able to do.
Yeah, I had a moment last night when, in the past, this always happens, when you have a team that has one superstar, or one guy who's truly electric, one guy that you really lean on, and that's been Matthews the past couple of years. I can't tell you how many times last year, late in a game, close game, I'd be yelling at the TV, get him on the ice. Like, get him back over the boards. Let's get going here. And last night, I was starting to lean towards that. I'm like, get him back out there. Get the big boy back. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Tavares is already on the ice. Like, okay, I guess John can probably take care of it. You know, it just changes your whole perception.
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be too many times when they put a line on the ice in the offensive zone for a faceoff where you go, man, what are these guys doing out here? Like, they went into, there was one stretch, and they went, it was Tavares, Commercial, Matthews, Tavares, Matthews. They went bang, 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 bang. Four shifts in a row. And then after you've run through everybody on the other side, then Kadri gets out there. It's not so terrible. And I think there's going to be times where they just overwhelm teams with the ability to do that.
Well, and Ray, I was thinking from Mike Babcock's perspective, like, you can just put anyone out there. Like, you don't really have to worry the situation, the matchup. Like, Tavares, D-zone draw, Matthews, O-zone. You know what I mean? Like, there's just so much flexibility.
So that's where, you know, the guys that are on the sides are going to play a large part of Toronto's success this year. And certainly without Nylander there, that makes the Matthews line a lot less dangerous at 5-on-5.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
You saw that last night.
It's just not the same. I mean, you know, Tyler Ennis created a couple really good plays early in particular, but he's not the same guy, and it's unfair to expect that from him. I don't know what Kadri's line's going to shake out to be. Like, I thought Lebo looked okay last night, but is Connor Brown the guy that's going to be on the right side, or is somebody else going to eventually be there? I have no idea. So there are some things that Babcock's still going to have to work through to be really comfortable as to say, you know, oh, you can put anybody out there. I think there's a couple, you know, certainly on the offensive side, Kadri's your third choice, only because the guys in front of him are of such elite nature.
Ray, we had Mike Pekka talking about his holdout earlier in the show, and he was saying that he wished he had a little bit more involvement himself during his holdout. Do you think there's a point where William Nylander will just say, you know what, Dad, you got to step away, agent, you got to just move aside. I got to go and play hockey, because I don't know what the breaking point for the player is. I think the dads these days are heavily involved, and I don't know when, as the athlete that has to go out and do it, when you say, you got to back off because I'm going to play and this is the right number for me.
Well, I mean, they're one day into the season, so I don't think it's yet. But I would say, you know,
I guess the question is, when does the player's voice kind of overtake the dad and the agent?
Well, hopefully, because Nylander's been around the professional game his whole life, he realizes that his dad is just his dad and his agent works for him. Like, hopefully he understands that, because it took me a long time. Oh, I'll say 6 or 7 years before I really figured out that, oh, wait a minute, my agent works for me. He's saying, oh, I can do this and I can do that. And I'm like, yeah, well,
I call the shots.
I'm the CEO of my own company.
Yeah.
It's me. And so I would say if Williams, just listening to the agent or just listening to his father, that's a mistake. I would say he'd be smart to take their advice and to hear what they have to say and to, you know, and to try and put it all together, but it's still your decision at the end of the day. Here's the other thing is, like, when we played, we had no information on what anybody else made because there was no salary disclosure.
You're speaking for yourself, because I had that.
Oh, okay. Well, until 1991, 7, 8 years into my career, there was none.
Yeah.
You'd go do a contract, and you had nobody to lean on, because you'd ask another guy, and we had all been conditioned not to say anything.
And
it's ridiculous. And when Bob Goodenough came in, he said, one of the first things we need to do is we need to salary disclose. And when we do, two things are going to happen. The fans are going to start ragging you guys for the amount of money that you're going to make, and the owners are going to tell you it's a terrible thing to do because it'll hurt the game. And as soon as they tell you it's a terrible thing to do, then you know it's the right thing. And they, those two things happened like rapid fire, bang, bang. And we were on the path to salary disclosure, which, as you said, helped you in your whole career. So Nylander's got to be able, through his agent, to build his comparables. They have to know what kind of ballpark they're in. He's in a really, really tricky spot because he's trying to predict what the future's going to hold, and that's really hard to do. And he doesn't really have a lot of leverage, almost none. And so he's trying to get to a place that might be pushing the envelope a little bit, and he's got no leverage to get there. And so it's I don't see this being an easy deal.
With Ray Ferraro, TSN hockey analyst. So there was no cup hangover in Washington last night. I was anticipating one, and they just blew the doors off the Bruins. But maybe the story of the night was what happened at the end of it. Yeah, I'm sure it would. But Lars Eller scores the seventh goal, and he celebrates, and he goes by the Bruins bench. And I don't think he was taunting them necessarily, but it was an elaborate celebration for a 7-0 goal. And Brad Marchand becomes the beacon of hope for integrity in the game, which I think is the epitome of hypocrisy. It's an, for me, it's an absolute joke that that guy is the one that's all about honor all of a sudden. And he goes and he grabs Eller and he fills him in pretty well. Now, Eller eventually dropped his gloves and it was a fight. But what did you make of that scene?
Well, kind of as you said, I mean, there is a point in the game where you're well aware that as you've scored again and it's lots to little, that the celebration probably doesn't need to be there. It's time to tone it down a little bit. And Eller didn't do that. And I can see why Boston was pissed. And I mean, it's a very old school response, right? Should Eller have celebrated? No. Should Marchand have grabbed him and filled him in? Probably not in today's game, but in an imperfect game, we're trying to get a perfect solution a lot of the times. And that just doesn't happen. So it was an imperfect solution, but I can see why the Bruins were sour. They probably should have been more sour from the fact that they tipped their net over by throwing seven pucks in it.
Ray, I think everybody says in hockey or in sports they have these timelines. In hockey, it's American Thanksgiving. You kind of find out what you have, everybody says. Oh, we'll know by American Thanksgiving. What do you think the internal read on that is, like the guys in the locker room, the guys in the bus, the guys in the press box? Do you think it's like five games? Do you think you say, yeah, this could be good, this could be bad? I'm kind of thinking it can't be more than 5 or 10 games.
It's way quicker than the American Thanksgiving, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Don't you remember like sitting around at the back of the bus and and all of a sudden you're like, man, we suck.
Yeah. A lot of truth is spoken in the back of the bus with a cold beer after a loss. Like, you just come with the heat.
Hey, we got to figure this out. And it's way before American Thanksgiving. You lose three out of the gate, and you're like, man, because all of a sudden, you start to see the lines get changed, the defense pairs change, guys are in and out of the lineup, and you can feel the stress way before everybody else notices it, for sure. And conversely, you win a couple of games and, you know, out of the gate, like, how good do you think Vancouver feels today? They're going on a 6-game road trip. Starts in Calgary on Saturday. But nobody gave them a chance to win. Now, Pettersson scores. It's a beauty. They get 5 goals from 5 young guys. And, oh, my, I mean, they're dancing here. Like, this is a great day. And so when they get on the plane, they're having a great flight.
Yeah, and Calgary's saying, oh, if we don't win the next one, we kind of suck.
And we've lost twice to Vancouver.
Yeah, no kidding. Like,
and so for there's the other thing of the way you say about an evaluation of a team. So Calgary made all these changes and they got such great hope, and already, you know, it didn't look so good. I mean, the power play, which was 29th, I think, last year, was 0-for-7 last night. You know, they were going to revamp that. Well, that didn't work for one night. And now they got to try and figure out a way not to lose two to what should be one of the worst teams in the league.
Good stuff, buddy. Where you at? When do you fly out? Tomorrow, or you're at home all weekend?
No, I'm home all weekend. love my Thanksgiving turkey dinner. I love that.
Attaboy.
I love sitting around and doing not a whole lot and watch a little baseball playoffs, a little football, and on the road Monday and the Dallas Tuesday.
All right, man. Well,
you
we're going to do
it a little
tomorrow.
Bit Italian raid. You throw in a little penne with a red sauce on Thanksgiving, or strictly turkey?
Strictly turkey. We have a ham. A couple of different kinds of potatoes.
I don't do a ham. I just can't do a ham.
You can't. My kids love that, and they just shovel it away. So yep. I'm turkey guy though. Turkey, and I hope there's extra because there's nothing better than the leftover sandwich. That is the winner.
Absolute
I
necessity.
I just do a straight little turkey with gravy, some mash, a corn, and couch.
No cranberry sauce?
No.
No, me neither. I am anti-cranberry.
Dude, can't do it. I love my family, but whoever thinks that stuffing is important...
Dude, that's sacrilegious. That's a loser comment.
You like a stuffing?
I could muck stuffing every day for the rest of my life. I love it.
I could care less if I ever seen it the rest of my life.
How about when you take it all and put it in a sandwich?
Yeah.
No.
Everything.
Oh,
God. The cranberry and the stuffing and... Little, you know, it's the most unhealthy part that I eat, and
you grab the turkey, you toast some bread, cheddar cheese, pickles, mayo,
what?
And turkey.
Dude.
We gotta fly.
Pickles?
Mr. Leahy, go have a bottle of scotch and pass out on the curb.
I wish.
All right, Ray, we'll do it again tomorrow.
Okay, see you, boys.
There's Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst. I will say that about like Thanksgiving dinner. Everyone has their own take. Everyone's got their own take on like the perfect meal. What's needed? What isn't? It's a great debate.
I've seen people, they just take bunches of turkey and put two pieces of bread and it's like pour gravy over it and make a giant Sandy.
Yeah.
And that's their
thing. Yeah. That's a big part of it, man.
Why
I don't
guys,
go down that road, but
why are you anti cranberry?
I've never liked it. I don't like the texture.
I don't know what you would ever put a cranberry sauce on.
Only on turkey.
What? Don't you put gravy on?
It's like a little sweet. It gives a little...
No, you grab some gravy and you dump it on turkey.
Wrong.
That's good, too.
That's it. That's...
You are fake news.
Because if somebody goes a little bit overboard on cooking the turkey, the gravy softens it up and it's just...
No, you not liking stuffing is the most shocking revelation. I
think
can't
stuffing
believe.
Is the most overrated thing in food.
I think it's good, but it's not. What is it?
I don't even know.
It's
like breadcrumbs.
I don't know.
It's just like a bunch of stuff that's fit in the turkey.
It's incredibly unhealthy, but it's spectacular.
Yeah.
It's the insides of the roasted turkey, and I'm not a fan of it.
I am. Jay Jaffe on Yankee Stadium last night. The moonshots by Stanton and Judge. And we'll look ahead to the DS series as well. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050. Sean texting in saying, my buddy once put on 30 pounds in college because he made stovetop stuffing every single night.
What is that?
Stovetop. I don't know if I've had it before, but I've seen it.
I got to, like, Jonas, you're probably in the same boat as I don't even know what stuffing is. Isn't it like bread?
It's
and like
bread.
Spices, right?
I honestly don't know.
I'm
not sure anybody actually knows what stuffing is.
But it's the one thing in a turkey dinner. I go buy it, and I just say, I don't even want that.
I honestly, I'm flabbergasted by that. I thought of anybody I know that would get after stuffing. It would be you. It's a delicious dish. I'm a big fan. I'm glad Sean brought this up because you know what we have to do.
A draft?
No. Tomorrow will be our second annual turkey dump. Remember we did the turkey dump segment last year?
Oh, I can do a turkey dump.
Thanksgiving this weekend. There are people coming back from school.
Own a turkey dump.
Yeah. We're going to do that tomorrow.
Okay, but what are we going to do? I think we should take calls and say, did you get turkey dumped or not?
Yes, maybe we do that tomorrow.
Because, everyone, this is a sad day across Canada.
Heartbreaking.
Because people are going home, they're meeting their significant others, and they're getting this information. I don't want to be with you anymore. I'm at college, we're not together.
And furthermore, guess what I've been doing the past 5 weeks at McGill?
Roasted turkeys.
Here's Jay Jaffe, senior writer at Fangraphs. Jay, you were at Yankee Stadium last night. What was the buzz like there?
Oh, boy. You know, the the ballpark, there was not a seat to be had, it seemed, looking out over the field from the press box, which is a marked contrast to the way it was in, let's just call it the end of the Derek Jeter, Alex Rodriguez era of the Yankees runs, when I think just got into the playoffs was taken for granted. Just an electric atmosphere, so much excitement when, you know, Luis Severino came out firing bullets, and when Aaron Judge hit that home run, you know, you could almost feel the stadium shaking. The fans were hyped.
Well, we were talking about this earlier. Like, Stanton hits violently. Like, that home run he hit last night, that was a violent home run.
But we talked about this with the Jays, Brian, for so many years. The deeper you go, can you continue to rely on the long ball? I don't know if you can.
What do you make of that, Jay? Do you think they can just launch home runs to a World Series?
You know, it certainly helps if you can get, you know, if you can do the little things. But here's the thing: you face so much good pitching in the postseason that short sequence offenses really do work well. You know, if you a bloop and a blast, that's all you need. You know, or just converting on a walk, stringing together four or five hits is just not always the easiest thing to do. You know, especially when you've got all the matchups that can come about with the bullpens. You know, just getting one matchup to your advantage, one mistake pitch, and sending it 400 feet is a fairly efficient way to put runs on the board.
With Jay Jaffe of FanGraphs. So tomorrow night, I know a lot of people out there, including up here in Toronto, they hate the amount of attention that the Yankees and the Sox get, but personally, I love it. Like, I love the fact that they're going to meet.
The greatest rivalry. I mean, you always want to tune in.
It is. It's oversaturated, but it's because the teams are always very good. I'm leaning Yankees here. How do you feel about how these two teams stack up starting tomorrow night?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I mean, first of all, for as hyped as the rivalry is, this is only the fourth time they've met in the postseason, you know, because of the way the format has changed over the years with the wild card, and the first time since 2004. So I think these two teams are really, I think, excited to play each other, and I think fans are excited to see them play. I think so much of this series hinges on what we're going to get from Chris Sale. His velocity has dropped precipitously since he first went on the disabled list with shoulder inflammation in late July. His five starts, you look at his average fastball velocity, it's like he's losing 2 miles an hour per outing, 98, 96, 94, 92, 90, and he was clearly frustrated that he wasn't able to pump it up there faster in his last tune-up start. You know, if Chris Sale can give them, you know, six strong innings twice in this series, then I think that it really does point to Boston. Anything else, though, I think you're looking at a very possible upset by the Yankees. I mean, you know, we saw how good their bullpen can be last night. We've seen it before. This is one of the best bullpens ever assembled, and it can do a lot to cover for a rotation that's maybe not elite. But I expect this is going to be a tight series, and, you know, in five games, there's really any outcome is possible.
Well, Jay, speaking of bullpens, where do you think we're going with starting pitching? Like, I looked this morning to see who was starting for Milwaukee, and it's Brandon Woodruff and Craig Counsell saying it's a bullpen day. It just seems like game one,
and also, and Jonas,
it's a bullpen day.
Don't you also find that in the playoffs, like, pitching just goes to the birds? It's like,
well,
amazing,
even last night,
pitcher. Yeah,
Luis Severino goes four innings.
I think there are a lot of things going on here. You know, let's not forget the Brewers had to play an extra game with the tiebreaker. The A's, you know, it's these teams are not always fleshed out as fully as they might be, and I think teams have realized that, you know, it really doesn't put you at that much of a deficit. It shouldn't put you in that much of a deficit if you're going all bullpen. I mean, these are two of the best bullpens in the game. Now, I think it's fair to criticize, you know, the execution, say, of the A's last night, and the choice to bring in Fernando Rodney in the sixth inning with the game on the line. But, you know, as far as the Brewers go, I mean, their starting pitching is not their strength. Their bullpen is. And, you know, with the way that the schedule works with the days off, they felt like they could maybe steal a game here by going with an all bullpen game. I think that it, you know, still having a pitcher who can give you six or seven good innings is still, you know, the model that that teams are going to be following. That, you know, if they intend to win something, it's still going to, you know, it's, you look on paper, it's still why the Astros are my World Series pick, or why, you know, I think the Indians, despite not having a very good regular season, have a better than average chance at making it to the World Series. But, yeah, you know, the bullpens are an increasing part of this, and we're seeing managers keep to a shorter and shorter leash, mindful of fatigue and the times through the order penalty, you know, in favor of the fresh arm.
With Jay Jaffe, senior writer at Fangraphs, you mentioned Cleveland and Houston. They go off tomorrow at 2:05. Two aces, two horses going up against each other, Kluber versus Verlander. But Josh Donaldson is going to have the spotlight on him up here in Toronto, and he's looked real good. He's looked like the bringer of rain. He's got an OPS of 920 now with the Tribe. He looks comfortable. He looks healthy. What kind of role do you expect Donaldson to play in whatever happens with the Tribe going forward?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Because there was so much else going on, I really did not get to see much of Josh Donaldson after the trade here. And, you know, there was, I think, so much controversy and so much concern about whether he would be the same player. But he really manage to put a nice ending on the season here. Looking at his stats, you know, 280 batting average, 400 slugging percentage, 520. I mean, that's Josh Donaldson. That's the Josh Donaldson more or less that we expect. And I think that he's going to be a big part of that team in the playoffs, if, you know, so long as his health allows. So I expect that he's going to be right in the middle of this with Jose Ramirez playing second base. You know, but you know, we'll see how this unfolds. But to me, that seems like the most likely scenario.
Jay, quickly, Canadian Thanksgiving stuffing guy or no stuffing guy?
You know, I'm always a stuffing guy myself. No. I think that stuffing is really kind of the glue that holds Thanksgiving together.
What is it? What do you like about it? Like, we don't even know what
it
is.
Well, that's the better question, Jay. Do you have any idea what is in stuffing?
The stuffing that I make generally has a bit of sausage and or you know some and mushrooms in it and lots of herbs. But you know, recipes vary. There are, you know, any one of a million recipes you can make for stuffing. The basis of mine. I think I'm going to be making it for my family here. My parents coming into town for American Thanksgiving in several weeks.
Wow!
You throw some sausage in there.
I might be
interested.
Jay Gordon Ramsey Jaffe from Fangraphs. Spectacular takes. Thank you, Jay. We appreciate it.
Hey, sure thing.
There's Jay Jaffe joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. And find great deals on Toyota RAV4 during the Maple Toyota 2018 clear out. Finance and lease rates from 0%. Visit MapleToyota.com.
And at Hayes TSN, it's a sad kind of weekend, but if you have turkey dump stories,
we want to hear them.
We want to hear them. You go back, you're trying to go out to dinner with your boyfriend, your girlfriend, and you get an absolute turkey dump right on your cranium.
Yes. A turkey sky dump. Pour your heart out.
We were thinking on the same line there.
Yes.
A turkey gobble sky dump.
Everyone's been there. You go to
dude,
you
I
go
didn't.
To school.
I was in the NHL.
I know you're in the NHL.
Like, you go back from you come back for that first weekend, you're like,
yeah. I've been in Guelph. You were in Kingston.
You were in Ottawa. Do you want to do drinks, dinner,
what's
whatever?
What's the story? Great to see you. It's been 5 weeks. And then you show up, and either the male or the female has a turkey dump waiting for you. Have you ever been turkey dumped, Jonas?
No.
Really?
They are on top of the water tower in your hometown.
Sky dumping. Turkey dump. All right, Bob McKenzie
chucking
and Darren
Drake. Chucking it off the water tower.
And now with social media, the whole world knows that you got
feeding
turkey
the pigeons.
Dumped.
Feeding the pigeons.
That's the worst part. Facebook status update. Turkey dumped. I'm home and I got turkey dumped.
It would be. We got to hear some stories. Can you just keep it real? Keep it somewhat like.
Pour your heart out.
And it maybe take some calls. I don't know. We can guide you through it. How you react?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can do that. We can play Dr. Phil for you. We'll do it. Bobby Mack, Darren Dreger in studio in the final hour Thursday night or tonight. Brady spotlight game for him. We'll get to that as well. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050.
Any bad ones?
Yeah, Ginny broke some poor guy's heart back in the day. tweeting in.
She's a loyal listener.
She's a great, great listener. And I support her.
So what did she do?
She said she tried to turkey dump some guy first year of university, and he just
and she got the reverse turkey?
No. She said he wouldn't have any, he just wouldn't accept it. And she took the train from Ottawa, which is where she was going to school, all the way to Sarnia to tell him to his face, which is very, I mean, that's integrity in a nutshell.
I like what you honorable. Did there, Jenny. But did it work out? Did you get back on the train and go back for turkey dinner? Or
no, I think what happened was she got there, the guy wouldn't accept it. She got back on the train on the way to Ottawa and eventually texted him and said, this is it.
Yeah, but if she went to his face and said, you're done, why would she have to text him on the train?
Probably the guy was, who knows, maybe he started sobbing or something, you know, and she was like, this is awkward and... Okay, we're still together, so it was kind of
you got to walk out, and it's
the train ride turkey dump.
Yeah, you just have some wine in the train, and
yeah, fire up the message. Fire up the text message. Basically, ghost. It's a borderline ghosting.
Oh, you block and delete. There's no question. Yeah. Block, delete, but turkey dump.
Sarnia to Ottawa, like that's tough. First year university, that wasn't going to work anyway.
I think you got to do it right. You go into the bathroom on the train, you climb up to the top, and then you text and say, over. The classic sky turkey dumpage.
Andrew tweeting in with a saying that probably is applicable to this show. Wall squat, turkey deuce and toss.
That is coming into play this weekend.
Yeah, that's that big time. Men and women throughout the country. Wall squat, turkey, deuce, and
toss. I'm taking control of the situation. We've got the insiders here at 6:20, right?
Yes.
After that, we are open phone lines if you want to talk about turkey dumps, Thanksgiving, stuffing.
Well, tomorrow we're going to do a lot of that, too.
I don't care. We're taking some live calls. We want to hear from people.
And the hotline's open. The hotline will
There's
be open.
Your There's your out.
The hotline will be open, okay?
There's your... No. We're doing it live.
I'm just telling you. 416-384-3877. Keep it within 30 seconds. Tell me how
it
happened.
I get it, but today is a special day.
No, so it's not. Tomorrow's the special day. Tomorrow is the day leading into the turkey dump.
I know, but then you don't do it. You don't do it.
All right. Bobby Mack and Darren Dreger in studio. Thursday night or tonight. The divisional series, they're all set. Jonas Siegel's in here from The Athletic. Good stuff, Jonas.
I don't have much to say about your...
That's fine.
...your turkey dump conversations.
Okay. Final hour up next. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050.